halfway through the program. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We have both a Facebook page and a great Instagram account. You can check those out at Illegal Curve as well. And of course, our website, you know the name. It's got the latest Jets and Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From NHL.com, we're going to take a look around the league. We're pleased to welcome to the program John Lane. John, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. My pleasure.
John, always appreciate your time. Thanks again for joining us, John. We sit here about 2 weeks or so ahead of the end of the regular season, and in the West and in the East, it seems like the Nashville Predators and the Tampa Bay Lightning are the cream of the crop in each of their conferences, respectively. Would you be surprised if those two teams aren't playing for Lord Stanley's Holy Grail come June of this year?
I would not be surprised because you're looking at the two teams which have at least 100 points, with the Predators leading the race for the President's Trophy. Each team has good depth, great goaltending, very exciting to watch, although as we've learned the past few seasons, winning the President's Trophy and getting 100 points, it's hardly a guarantee for anybody to get to the Stanley Cup Final, because I've always believed that it's not how you start, it's how you finish, and which team is playing the best at the right time.
John, which team has been more surprising to you in the Western Conference? Is it the Calgary Flames or is it the Colorado Avalanche? For different reasons, obviously.
Well, I like the Colorado Avalanche because I always felt, in spite of what happened last season, Jared Bednar didn't take over as coach until maybe about a couple of weeks before training camp. So he really didn't have much time to prepare and evaluate and see what he has. But he's done a great job in Denver this season. They've been able to stay healthy. Nathan McKinnon is playing like a hot trophy candidate. So to see Colorado where they are in the first wild card into the playoffs from the Western Conference, it's definitely a nice surprise.
John, you had an opportunity earlier in the month to sit down and chat with Patrick Laine, ask him a number of questions. What was your impressions of the Jets sophomore sniper, and what do you think of the beard?
I like the beard. The beard is great. And he's going to keep it for as long as the Jets are playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I told him, hopefully for you guys, it's until the end of June. You would have no idea that he's 19 years old. He's very modest, very mature for his age. He won't give you that killer quote, and he won't put himself over. He's a team guy first, very quick to praise his teammates, and obviously having a great season for you guys in Winnipeg.
John Lane is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. John, what's it going to take for a team to knock off the Tampa Bay Lightning? I mean, they've been the best team pretty much in the league for the majority of the season. Obviously, the Nashville Predators in the West have certainly staked their claim to that title. What's it going to take for a team to come in and knock off the Tampa Bay Lightning in a seven-game series?
Well, being at Tampa Bay is so good, I would say puck luck, among other things. Yeah. Among other things, but nah, they're going to be tough. First and foremost, it's solving Andre Vasilevskiy, who I think is going to get some rest down the stretch. Since he's one of the league leaders in appearances this season. But to me, when you look at the Stanley Cup playoffs, it starts with goaltending. We've seen numerous goaltenders stand on the head and carry their teams deep into the postseason. So solving Vasilevskiy and trying to figure out a way to shut down Kucherov and Stamkos. And when he comes back, Andre Palat and all those weapons they have.
John, I follow you on Twitter, and I recommend everyone follow you on Twitter as well, at John Lane NHL. And you've been tweeting out kind of on a daily basis as of late, the current playoff matchups. And, you look at that Eastern Conference, and, two matchups stand out to me. Of course, that's the Boston Bruins versus the Toronto Maple Leafs. They've been pretty much locked in for the majority of the season. And then to me, Pittsburgh against Philadelphia. Out of those two series, I mean, which team is going to kill the other team first?
I really don't see any other team blowing out their opponents, because this is a tough league. It's a competitive league, and playoffs and anything could happen. But After I answer the question, I am concerned about the Flyers. They've hit the skids a little bit. Peter Mrazek, he's been vulnerable. Alex Lyon's actually, I think, getting to start today or tomorrow, whatever the Flyers play. So goaltending, even with the acquisition of Peter Mrazek, is still a question, still a concern in my mind. And knowing how the Penguins have played since that slow start of the season and knowing the way that they've that they can turn it up during the Stanley Cup playoffs, I think you have to be concerned if you're a Flyers fan. But you know what? That's why they play the games. Everybody resets come come middle of April, and you never know what happens. So I expect an exciting, competitive, and close first round in all the series.
You know, John, one team that took the league by storm to start things off, they've slowed down a little bit of later, the Vegas Golden Knights. Do you think it's just the normal lull in the season and that they'll be ready to go when the playoffs start in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what Vegas has done is just ludicrous, and I mean that in a good way. What a story out in Sin City, the way they've been playing all season. Of course, no matter how good you are, you're going to hit a lull. We've seen that with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But come playoff time, they're going to be ready to go. We've waited for them all season to drop off, I guess, get down to where projections, or at least close to where projections had them at the beginning of the season. But they've stuck around. They've played really well. They're a very, very well-coached team. They're getting great goaltending, again, goaltending from Marc-Andre Fleury. And if they end up playing the Avalanche, it's going to be a tough series for the boys in Colorado. So I think Vegas rights the ship, and I think they continue to surprise.
John Lane is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is a writer for NHL.com. And, John, the perception exists that hockey players are sort of one-track mind, one-track individuals. They don't have any outside interest. They're strictly only focused 100% on hockey. You had a really interesting, and of course, that's not a correct perception. They certainly are well-rounded individuals, a lot of them. You know, you had an interesting article on NHL.com this week about Andrew Ferentz, who started a new job as the NHL's Director of Social Impact, Growth, and Fan Development. Andrew Ferentz, you know, a committed environmentalist, going back to a meeting that he had with Dr. David Suzuki, back in 2006. What's Andrew Ferentz going to be doing for the NHL, and what is sort of his role entail? And this is definitely an interesting position, so maybe tell our audience a little bit about what you found out in your conversation with Andrew Ferentz.
Yeah, Andrew, he has a new role as the NHL Director of Social Impact, Growth, and Fan Development, which he started Monday. He's got a passion for environmentalism, which started while doing chores at his parents' house. And he said to himself, you know what, doing these things to protect the environment is very cool. So he's pretty much going to help take the efforts of NHL Green and how committed we are in that area to the next level. And for him, instead of just recycling at home and changing your light bulbs and being more efficient, okay, that's great. But you know what? Why not talk about it? Why not push yourself to be a champion for it? It's great to say that you're going to do things, but Andrew's main responsibility is going to be like, all right, let's continue to get people involved. Let's continue to put action behind our words.
John, I wanted to ask you about coaches here for a second. I mean, a lot of talk as of late here in Winnipeg has centered around the Rocket Richard Trophy race. You know, got Patrick Laine one goal behind Ovechkin right now. Evgeny Malkin is a couple goals behind Ovechkin. And obviously, you know, a lot of talk is centered around, you know, the Hart Trophy race as well. Blake Wheeler getting a lot of attention. Taylor Hall getting a lot of attention. But when it comes to coaches, I think we'd all agree that Gerard Gallant is probably the favorite to win the Jack Adams Trophy. But when you look at, you know, what some other coaches have done around the league, Jared Bednar in Colorado, Bruce Cassidy in Boston, I mean, John Hines with my Devils in New Jersey, Peter Laviolette with the way the Predators have played, I would throw in Paul Maurice in there as well. Is this one of the best Jack Adams races we've had in quite some time?
I think it's terrific. I mean, I think if not for what Gerard Gallant is doing out in Vegas, it would be a lot tighter. It'd be a lot more open to debate. But those guys you ran down, I think they're excellent candidates. But you really can't deny or ignore, again, it's just the incredible success the Golden Knights have had. And Gerard Gallant has proven to be the right coach, the right fit for that group of players. So, yeah, I mean, it would have been a lot tighter if not for the expansion Vegas Golden Knights doing what they're doing. And a lot of that credit goes to Gerard Gallant, which is why he's tops on my list.
You know, John, we're about to see something potentially. Well, we likely will see something that we haven't seen in over 40 years, is that no NHL coach is going to lose his job in the season. Just how surprising is that, considering the turnovers we're used to seeing year in, year out, to have an entire NHL season without one coach losing his job?
I don't think it's surprising, because the league is more and more competitive each and every season. Teams are getting better, players are better trained, and coaches do a better job. So when you look at the success of a lot of these teams in the league and how close these playoff races are, that doesn't surprise me at all.
John Lane from NHL.com, our guest on the program. John, we'll let you go on this last question. I was scrolling through your Twitter feed and saw that you were tweeting about March Madness yesterday. And, of course, we saw the number 16 seed UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore County, knock off Virginia.
Busted by
last
bracket.
Night. Busted Ezzie's bracket. Busted a ton of brackets, as he should have went with Kentucky. I told him that beforehand. But, you know, from your perspective, John, what would be the equivalent, you know, for this year's NHL playoffs of a number 16 defeating a number one? What's the equivalent? Is it, you know, is it Nashville losing in the first round? Is it Tampa losing in the first round? Or is there something else that's the equivalent of a 16 defeating a one?
Well, there are no UNBCs in the National Hockey League, and that's taken nothing away from the great story UNBC is. In risk of upsetting people who play the brackets, upsets are fun. I love upsets in March Madness. It makes it more fun than it really is. But I guess the way the thing's going right now is if the Dallas Stars were able to upset the Nashville Predators, I think that'd be pretty big, considering Dallas is scratching and clawing and trying to find its way into the playoff picture and may actually have to enter the back door. You look at Nashville as the top team in the league right now, a team which is better than the one that made the run to the Cup final last season. I think when you put all that together, and if you had to pick a stunning upset with the way the playoff matchups are right now, I would have to go Dallas over Nashville.
Well, the Predators have a 20-point lead over the Dallas Stars, and coincidentally, that is what UMBC defeated Virginia by last night in that contest, so it is a very apropos selection. John Lane from NHL.com, thanks for joining us this morning on the program. We'll do it again soon.
I look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Take care, John. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to John Tavares and the New York Islanders. The Islanders have free-fallen out of the playoff race in the Eastern Conference. Will this have an impact on Tavares' future in Long Island? That's up next. You're listening to the TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
John Tavares will meet with his agent, Pat Brisson, at the end of the season. They'll begin to map out whatever that strategy might be, and they'll inform the New York Islanders of their intent well in advance of the June draft in Dallas so that Gar Snow, management of the New York Islanders, can make their necessary adjustments. But they've got to visit and revisit the criteria that will be established ultimately by Tavares. Is he willing to wait for the new building? This could be 3+ years. Does he see the pieces within the organization, or is he getting a promise from the New York Islanders that there are pieces that are going to be brought in that are going to help this team win a Stanley Cup? So all of this will come into play before the draft in June.
Okay. That's TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger from this week's edition of Insider Trading, talking about John Tavares' future with the New York Islanders. The Islanders not going to be a playoff team this season in the Eastern Conference. They certainly looked like they were going to be competitive for a lot of the year, but since January 1st, and into an absolute tailspin, 10-15-6 in the year, calendar year 2018, that's good for 27th overall in the NHL. So the Islanders certainly been one of the bottom feeding teams in the league since the start of 2018. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. And this segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want to awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Happy belated birthday, by the way, to Keener. It was his birthday earlier this week.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. As he dropping the happy belated happy birthday. And, of course, a happy St. Patrick's Day to all of our listeners out there. We're remiss in not saying that earlier in the program. If you're out celebrating today, be sure to do so responsibly.
You mean Happy Lion A Day?
Some people are calling it that, St. Patrick. You know, St. Patrick's. It's all good for Winnipeg Jets fans today on this Saturday, the 17th of March. So, Ezzy, going back to John Tavares, let's say you have a shiny John Tavares Islanders jersey. You got it at Keener Jerseys, of course. Is that a jersey?
Is it the old Fisherman Friends jersey?
I had a hat with the Fisherman Friend on it. I like that hat. I don't know what happened to that hat.
Fisherman's Friend.
Yes.
Not Fisherman Friends. Okay. What did I say? I don't know.
You're fine. Don't worry about it. Anyways, if you have that Islanders jersey, is it going to be out of date this time next year? Or is Tavares still going to be a member of the New York Islanders? And if he's not going to be a member, where do you see him likely ending up?
Yeah, well, let me answer the first part of that question. The second part, I have no idea, because I think a lot of teams are going to be after John Tavares if he's available on the free agent market. But I have no idea is my answer to the first part of the question, Drew, because we talked about this a month ago, a month and a half ago, and I was kind of leaning towards John Tavares staying with the New York Islanders and signing a long-term contract. But, you know, you look at the way the Islanders have played, Drew, and you mentioned the record. I mean, the record has been pretty bad here over the last 30 games or so. And, you know, I'm starting to wonder if John Tavares is going to stay around. And, you know, I thought Justin Bourne of The Athletic, he does a great job. I wanted to read something that he wrote up on The Athletic for his mailbag. And I kind of agree with him. And he says, I'm torn on this. On the one hand, if it's me, I'm running for the hills. What can this organization sell him on outside of lots of money and Matthew Barzal? But John Tavares is a special cat. He's loyal. He's connected to Long Island. He likes the amount of media scrutiny, in parenthesis, pretty minimal. He just doesn't love attention, and he wants to win. And the Isles do have some pieces, so maybe they can sell him on the team. I've honestly got no idea what he's going to do, but I can tell you, if you live in Toronto, you know what the locals think he'll do. I just can't see it myself. I agree with him. He's basically saying Tavares could stay, he could go. But when you look at the Islanders right now, Matthew Barzal is going to win the Calder Trophy. I mean, he's a great player, and they've got other great players there. Anders Lee's having a great year. Josh Bailey's having a great year. I really like Brock Nelson. They've got some good defensemen there. But, I mean, is this team going to be a Stanley Cup contender next year? Well, I don't think so.
Would you say that general manager Garth Snow and his interesting track record as GM in Long Island, is that a detriment to keeping John Tavares? I mean, they've yet to shore up the goaltending situation. They've yet to shore up the defense. Sure, he's got some offensively talented players to play with. But if you're John Tavares and you're looking for stability, why is Long Island? I mean, what does Long Island provide you? You don't really have a home rink. You probably won't have a home rink for the next three seasons at best. You're bouncing between Brooklyn and maybe back into the old Nassau Memorial Coliseum. You have a general manager that fans, you know, for all, you know, all due respect to the fans who are paying for billboards to try and fire. You've had ownership upheaval over the years.
You've got one of the nicest practice facilities in the NHL.
Oh, well, there you go. I guess
they
got that going for
you. They do have one of the nicest practice facilities.
I mean, I just don't see, I mean, I understand. I mean, I know it's New York, but it's not like you're the Rangers. You're probably the small minnow in the market of New York. It's just a lot that seems to be going against Tavares staying in New York.
And I think what would go for him staying is his the idea that he's a very loyal person, and we've been hearing that throughout the last couple of years, is that he wants to be the guy who turns things around. He wants to be the guy who takes a storied franchise that won four straight Stanley Cups in the early 80s and really make them what they could have been or what they were back then once again, and make them that big fish in the New York market again. So I think he took a lot of pride in that responsibility and really saw that as his end goal, was being that deliverer of what could be potentially a championship to the Long Island market, which is, again, one that hasn't seen that since the early 80s. And again, they've had so much disappointment. When you have a player that's as talented as a John Tavares is, to have that and kind of fumble it away would be a death knell for this market, because really, what happens if you don't have him? I mean, yeah, as he touched on this point, they've got a lot of nice pieces, but the fact of the matter is, if you don't have that gem, that number one guy, then that's a big stumbling block, and it could take a number of years to get it back.
If Tavares stays with the Islanders, he has to be staying because he sees the light at the end of the tunnel.
Right.
Like, it goes back to my point. Unless the Islanders are going to get really aggressive in free agency,
mm-hmm.
and bring in, you know, a number one goaltender and bring in some secondary scoring, I think you could probably bring in, you know, another top four defenseman. I don't see them necessarily being up there with the Tampa Bays and the Pittsburghs and the Columbuses, and even you could throw the Devils in there right now as an up-and-coming team, right? I mean, I don't think that you're staying because you think you're going to win a Stanley Cup next year. I think you're staying because you think you can win a Stanley Cup 3 years from now or 4 years from now, right? Dave, to your point, I mean, he's obviously a loyal guy, but this Islanders team, for me, is kind of going sideways.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
I was just going to say, I think it's incumbent on ownership and the GM, frankly, to sit down with him and not incumbent. This is what they're going to do. They're going to make a pitch. Like you just said, Ezzie, they're going to have to say to him, this is our vision. And they're going to lay out a plan. And if he subscribes to what they see as well, then that'll factor into his decision making. Now, whether he stays or whether he takes the dump truck of Brink's money that some other team is going to dump in front of him to start up there, then that's all a possibility. I mean, it's very easy to say. There's nobody aside from John Tavares and his agent really who know what's in his head, what he's going to do. But again, it could be very, you know, disconcerting for a player to think you're going to be spinning your wheels for number of years without that chance of winning a Stanley Cup. Because the fact of the matter is, he's going to be making a boatload of cake, whether it's in New York or whether it's somewhere else. At the end of the day, he wants that plus the chance of also making the Stanley Cup and winning a cup.
I honestly think it goes back to what we were talking about here at the beginning of the segment, Dave. I think it could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of leaning towards John Tavares testing the free agent market now, as opposed to a couple years back, Drew, when I was adamant that Stamkos was staying in Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a different situation.
Tampa Bay
was a team that came very close to winning the Stanley Cup. And it's just a much better team than the Islanders.
A better organization, I would go as far as to say.
Well,
I mean, it's a better organization. The Lightning have earned the respect. They have a general manager, Steve Yzerman, who's considered one of the top GMs in the entire league. They have a market that's got stability associated with it. Every team's going to offer him $11 million a year, $12 million a year, whatever the number is, that's what he's going to get. The Islanders can give him that extra year, but when you're talking about the difference between, let's say, 7 years and $84 million and 8 years and $96 million, it's not a huge difference. You want to go to a place that you're going to feel comfortable, that you're going to feel stability, that you're going to feel as the organization is going to do everything in its power to support you. And I don't know if that's Long Island right now. We know that Montreal is desperate to get him. St. Louis has been talked about as a destination for him. A lot of teams would be interested in bringing every team in the NHL would be interested in being John Tavares. So I don't know why he wouldn't go to July 1st and see what there is to offer. I mean, what's the incentive to give that up before July 1st? I think July 1st hits or when that legal tampering period allows where people can have discussions.
I thought you were going to say the legalization of marijuana.
No, that's a separate issue on July 1st altogether. That's a separate issue, completely separate.
That's July
issue.
1st, isn't it?
It's supposedly it's going to be July 1st to see if the bill is passed in the Senate in time, but again, that's a
smoke up, Drew.
But you know, if you're John Tavares, I think you go to market. I think you see what teams have to say to you, and you make a decision accordingly. And, you know, Pierre LeBrun addressed this earlier in the week as well. A lot of talk about maybe a sign and trade is done. If it's clear that John Tavares is going to leave New York, maybe New York signs the contract, gets Tavares that extra year, trades him to whatever his new destination is going to be, and Tavares and the Islanders, as a result, don't lose him for nothing. They get some sort of asset in return from that team for the extra year that Tavares would give up.
Yeah, it's a good point. It could happen. You don't see that happen very often.
Never happened
by the way.
In the NHL. It's something that happens in the NBA
right.
All the time.
Especially with a player of John Tavares' quality. I mean, Tavares to me is a top five center. Maybe top three center.
No, without a doubt.
Right? So, I mean, if the Islanders end up losing Tavares,
yeah,
they're going to be even further back than they are right now. I mean, let's be honest. They're not making the playoffs. For me, Garth Snow, and especially because he's a former NHL goaltender, had a great career with the Philadelphia Flyers, I mean, he has to bring in a number one goaltender. Mm-hmm. I just don't think Yaroslav Halak is the man for that job.
No, he's failed in that regard year in and year out, except for, you know, pockets of brilliance that Halak has played well or Greiss has played well. He hasn't been able to shore that up consistently with your bona fide number one
goalie.
You've
compared it, Drew, to the Winnipeg Jets and Andre Pavlik with Yaroslav Halak, and it's a similar situation there.
Absolutely. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN.com wrote about Blake Wheeler and the Jets earlier in the week.
Yeah, there was a good quote in there.
Yeah, from some jackass. Greg is going to join us next on the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. A quick update from Winnipeg Jets practice. Adam Lowry on the ice, centering the fourth line between Brandon Tanev and Jack Roslovic. The top three lines, the same as they were versus Chicago. But Adam Lowry looking likely to return to the Jets lineup, centering the fourth line for the Jets as they get healthier up the middle.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Greg Wyshynski. You know Greg as the senior NHL writer at ESPN.com. He penned a great article earlier in the week on the Winnipeg Jets and Jets captain Blake Wheeler. Greg, good morning and welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm currently wearing a vintage Hartford Whalers jersey in honor of St. Patrick's Day.
Should we play Brass Bonanza underneath the interview for the remainder of the show?
Please don't, but I will say that it is common knowledge amongst hockey writers and perhaps less known amongst hockey fans that is, in fact, the ringtone for one Pierre LeBrun,
yes,
which I think is one of my favorite things about him.
Yes, Pierre has blocked us on all social media and won't give us his cell number anymore, so we haven't been able to contact him recently, but good to know nonetheless. Greg, you know, congratulations. A great article earlier in the week on ESPN.com about the Winnipeg Jets and about Captain Blake Wheeler.
Yeah, Greg, how come Dave and I didn't get a quote in your article? I mean, aren't we just as good as Drew? What's going on here?
You are just as good, but I think only Drew can perfectly capture the transformative lifespan of a Winnipeg fan from the deserting of the city to the return of the team and really kind of picturing. I mean, it was like watching a guy in Madden film, really. It was just very stirring, and I thought he painted a good picture.
Thank you, Greg. It's nice of you to say. Obviously, you know, you wrote about the Jets, and the Jets, you know, we were happy to see the national attention because we don't often get that attention. You know, in your conversations with the team and with players on the team, it seemed like you were impressed and even maybe a little surprised at just how influential Blake Wheeler is in that locker room. You've been around the game for so many years now. You know, did that stand out to you, just how the leadership qualities that Blake Wheeler brings to the table as the head man, the head captain of the Winnipeg Jets?
It really did. And, you know, not simply just for two reasons. One, because, you know, I in talking to the players, unprompted, they'd bring him up. I mean, just it's just one of these things where it's just like he'd be talking and all of a sudden it's like, and then, you know, what Wheels does is incomparable, and you know what he brings to the team and what he does behind the scenes is incredible. I don't think anyone's coached him to do that. So it's been really impressive to just see, you know, how influential a guy is where his teammates, you know, will bring him up unprompted like that. It's rare you see that. And then the other aspect of it too is the stories that Cheryl Dayoff was telling about, you know, just when Shifley goes down, Wheeler comes into Maurice's office and just says, hey, whatever you need. You know, I'll play center if it means playing center. I know it's not my natural position. I know it'll probably affect my numbers, but whatever you need, I'll do it. And to hear stories like that, I mean, I think exemplify what captain material is. And then, you know, and kind of sort of a sidebar to that, I mean, I've covered Wheeler for a long time, and, you know, when he was with the Bruins and other places, and he just kind of like never really struck you as being the Messier type, let's just say that, you know, during his career. So to see how he's matured for this team and this market and become the player that he is, both on the ice and behind the scenes, has been really, really inspiring and kind of a reminder not to judge or label players when they're that young.
No, Greg, just sticking with Blake Wheeler and your article here, and I agree with you. I think earlier on in his career, you wouldn't maybe think that he was going to maybe be one of the best captains in the NHL. And And in that sense, the fact that Blake Wheeler has really, you know, saved his best for his early 30s, I mean, he's going to set career marks this year at age 31. Does that really make him the perfect captain for the Jets and really the embodiment of the Jets, a team that's taken, you know, up until now, 7 years since coming over from Atlanta to really hit their stride?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think the, you know, one of the undercurrents of the story I wrote was the sense of patience and the sense of not overreacting when adversity strikes. And, you know, it was funny. We're putting together these sort of like obituaries. I won't call them eulogies because we did those in Puck Daddy, and those were a very specific kind of thing. But we're doing these obituaries for ESPN, and I wrote the one on Edmonton, who's about 5 or 6 points away from elimination. And, you know, to see how things have gone for them versus how the Jets approached their maturation as a contender, I mean, one is a study in patience and a study in knowing your roster and trusting your core and believing what you have is going to work if you just kind of see it through and add a few significant pieces here and there, versus this overreactive, super aggressive plan that Peter Chiarelli had that I think has left the Oilers in worse shape now than, you know, they were 2 years ago. So I think, you know, the Wheeler thing is sort of the bellwether for the overall approach of the team, which is, you know, even if this person isn't the player we think he should be at this point, let's stick with it. We believe in this guy, and we believe he's going to figure it out eventually.
You know, Greg, one of the comments from the article was, it's kind of like the Green Bay Packers, you know, and that's kind of the mentality here in Winnipeg, is that it's a very small community. It's a passionate fan base, as you well know. But in terms of attracting players to the market, of course, it's a little bit more difficult than attracting them to places like L.A., New York, Chicago. Do you think the attitude is changing slightly, especially now that the Jets are seen as a contender for a number of years with the prospects that they have, the players that they have in this organization? Do you think that, like a guy like Paul Stastny being willing to waive his no move, do you think that the attitude is changing slowly? And obviously that's largely a result of the winning.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's completely a result of the winning, which is not a bad thing. I mean, I think we've always assumed that Winnipeg would have a better chance of attracting players and having them sign to longer-term deals if they were a successful team and they had players you like to play with. I mean, for God's sakes, if you go to Paul Stastny and say, hey, if you waive this no-trade clause, you get to play between Ehlers and Line A for the rest of the season. You know, there aren't many players that they're going to say no to that. But, you know, as far as, like, consistently attracting players, it's still going to be a sell job. It's still going to take guys that are going to, you know, not mind the market, you know, not want to be in a major American city or someplace else like that. Or even play in a place like Vegas where it's palm trees and golf all around the calendar. It's going to take guys like I mentioned in the article with Bufflin's case that really understand what the franchise is, really understand what the city is, and really believe in what they are building or have built there. And you know, there are enough guys in this league that put a premium on the quality of the organization, the quality of the people running the team, and the ability to win, where locale might be secondary. So I still think it's an uphill battle for Winnipeg to contend for free agents. But I don't think it's nearly as hard when you're as successful as they look like they're going to be for the next several years.
Greg Wyshynski, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Greg is, of course, the senior NHL writer for ESPN.com. You know, Greg, it's funny. Your last comment sort of segued perfectly. Last segment, we were talking about John Tavares and his future on Long Island, saying that, you know, the Islanders are a bit in upheaval. They don't really have a solid arena plan. They're years away from having a solid arena. And we were discussing, you know, do we think that, you know, the uncertainty around the franchise might impact John Tavares with his future in Long Island and where he's going to go as a free agent, if anywhere. You know, how do you see John Tavares' free agency playing out over the next few months and then July 1st, if it does come to that?
Well, I'll say this about the arena situation being in New York. I do believe it'll happen. I just think that it's going to happen a few years down the line. And in the meantime, you know, Tavares might have to spend another 3 years in Brooklyn or wherever, you know, playing games for what is, you know, sort of a nomadic existence for the Islanders until this arena is ready. So that's not an ideal situation, but at the very least, I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. As far as his free agency goes, I still believe at the end of the day he wants to be an Islander and win it as an Islander. There's a part of me that thinks this is just following the Stamkos path of seeing all the other options and seeing what money is on the table, and then eventually coming back to your team and saying, here are the terms, meet them, and then they do. But then, you know, you look around the league at what St. Louis did. I think St. Louis right now has positioned themselves to make a run at Tavares, with bringing Stasny back potentially being the fail-safe. I think San Jose has positioned themselves to go after Tavares. And, you know, everybody that I talk to behind the scenes continues to say, like, one of the main reasons they think that Marc Bergevin still has a job in Montreal is his relationship with Pat Brisson and the potential of John Tavares coming to the Canadiens and being the center that they've, you know, craved for 2 decades now. So if I were a betting man, I'd probably still make the safe bet that he stays on the island. But there, I think there are other options out there, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's listening based on the disaster the Islanders have become on the ice this season.
Greg, I wanted to ask you about the Carolina Hurricanes and specifically their search for a new GM. Bob McKenzie tweeted yesterday that Paul Fenton, assistant GM of the Predators, has taken his name out of the conversation. I guess the question for you is, I'm not going to ask you who you think the next general manager of the Hurricanes is going to be, but whoever that general manager ends up being, do you see that general manager being very active? Because let's be honest, this Carolina Hurricanes team hasn't been in the playoffs for quite a long time now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the modus operandi for Tom Dundon, is to find somebody who's going to be able to shake up this roster a little bit, and most likely do so with a lot of input from the owner, which is, I think, one of the reasons why some people might be hesitant about joining a situation like that, and rightfully so. I mean, it's a team that hasn't been successful, and an owner that seems like he's overreaching a little bit at the start, and that's not always an appetite, an appeasing thing for an assistant general manager who's meticulously kind of building his career like Fenton or any of the number guys that have pulled their names out of consideration. But at the end of the day, it's a GM job. There's only 31 of them. They're going to find someone to work with the owner. But I think it's pretty clear that this is not going to be a situation where you're going to have a Lou Lamoriello type coming in there and ruling with an iron fist. It's going to have to be somebody who understands the dynamic at play here, which is that the owner is going to be very much involved in the process of building this team.
You know, Greg, Ilya Kovalchuk has been away from the NHL for 5 years. Which team do you see him most likely going to when he returns to the NHL?
Well, I thought it was going to be the Rangers before I read he wants to win a cup this week. So but I mean, it's everybody that I've talked to that knows Kovalchuk a little bit has told me that he really enjoyed his time in the Northeast. It could be the Devils again. I mean, the way that team has been built, they're clearly on the road to some level of contention, and adding him to that mix would be interesting. Although, in full disclosure, the last time they added Kovalchuk to a team that already had a top line left wing, it didn't really work out all that well for that top line left wing staying. It was one of the reasons Parise, I think, decided to leave. But, I think there are definitely opportunities out there. He's clearly still got plenty left. He's an amazing power play specialist at the very least. But every indication I've gotten is that he's going to look to be in the Northeast when he comes back to the NHL. And there are obviously, a few teams that sort of fit that geography, and I'll be probably one of those.
Last question for you, Greg, and we always appreciate your time. You mentioned the New Jersey Devils. They've been one of the great stories so far this season. Nobody really had many expectations, and they're still sitting in a playoff spot, although trying to hold off the surging Florida Panthers. Does Devils head coach John Hynes deserve more credit for the job he's doing behind the bench? We know Gerard Gallant is right now the favorite to win the Jack Adams Trophy, but does John Hynes deserve more credit for the job he's doing there?
Yeah, I think Gallant won it in October based on what they did in their first month. Yeah, he does, and I freely admit when I make gigantic miscalculations, and I made a miscalculation with Hynes. I thought he was not the right coach for this team. I didn't like the system he was preaching. He wasn't getting the offensive results. And at the end of the day, it looks like it was more of a problem with construction than it was with coaching. And now that he's got a number of high-tempo, fast-skating guys and a better quality of offensive player, and guys like Heischer and Bratt, that have come to this team in the last year, it's clear that his system works. And it's clear that high-tempo kind of play with the right personnel can really put the opponents on their heels and keep the Devils in almost every game that they've been down in. I mean, they've rallied a number of times in the third period to pull points out of games. So does he deserve more consideration? Yes, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like the Calder Trophy at this point, where Everybody's playing for second place behind Gallant for the Jack Adams and Barzal for the Calder. I think those two awards are pretty much cinched right now.
Greg Wyshynski is the senior NHL writer for ESPN.com. Greg, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll do it again real soon.
Awesome. Much appreciated. Thanks for everybody who checked out the Winnipeg article on ESPN and got some really good feedback on it.
Take care, Greg. Thanks again.
Greg, hold on. Before we let you go here, Greg, how far is UMBC going to go?
They play like they did last night all the way. Although, I must say, as a University of Maryland graduate, to see UMBC do that and now have like bragging rights is a little bit humbling. I don't quite. It's like if all of a sudden the Moose had bragging rights over the Jets.
Well, you know, the Terrapins obviously will have to get things going if they want to keep pace with, what are they, the Labradors? Is that what they are?
The Retrievers.
Yeah. Exactly.
What's a Terrapin?
It's a turtle. Anyways,
oh,
Greg.
Yeah, it's Terrapins. Yeah, Diamondback Turtles. That's what the Terrapins are.
Greg, thank you, buddy.
Take care.
When we come back, we'll talk about the coaching race, the Jack Adams
race. I
want
to talk more about Terrapins.
We can do that, too. A little more love for some of the other coaches.
What areas of the world do they live in?
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Another convincing win in regulation for your team. I see the smile on your face.
I don't know about convincing, but it's a huge win. I mean, it is. That's a playoff type game, as close as you can get to the playoffs without being there. And you know, our guys played with great urgency, good commitment, good intensity. It was far from perfect, but when you play with that type of urgency and intensity, good things will happen for you. And we were a little opportunistic again tonight. We scored on...
That's Colorado Avalanche head coach John Hines. Pardon me, Jared Bednar.
I was like, what?
I got my head coaches confused. Jared Bednar.
I'm like, was there a trade?
No. There was not a coaching trade. That's Jared Bednar after a victory earlier this week against the St. Louis Blues. A crucial win for the Avalanche. They currently sit in the top wild card spot, tied with the Dallas Stars, tied with the Anaheim Ducks. Of course, the Avalanche and the Stars have the wild card positions by virtue of their more regulation and overtime wins. The Anaheim Ducks do not have that tiebreaker as currently stands. The Colorado Avalanche, another one of those good news stories this year in the NHL after they were so horrific last year. And, Ezzy, the perception is that it's going to be Gerard Gallant winning the Jack Adams, and it's not even going to be competitive. And that's probably going to be what happens. But we want to give some love to those other coaches in the league who are getting maybe a little swamped by the Gallant performance this year. And a guy like Jared Bednar certainly constitutes as one of them. Coming off a horrific season in Colorado, he's proven that he is deserving of this, his first NHL head coaching job, as he's got the Avalanche right in the wild card hunt in the Western Conference.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Drew. I mean, if the season ends today, Gerard Gallant most likely wins the Jack Adams, but I think it should be a little bit closer than maybe you know, some people are thinking it's going to be right now, because you know, you mentioned Jared Bednar, and obviously he's got the connections to Manitoba, and you know, he was a great coach in the American Hockey League, and you know, John Hines, you know, has done a great job with the New Jersey Devils, and I mean, that's a team that had very low expectations going into the season. You're talking about two of the worst teams in the league last year,
yeah,
in the Devils and Avalanche. And you know, we mentioned, you know, some other coaches when we were talking to John Lane. I mean, you got to throw Paul Maurice in the conversation. I think you got to throw Peter Laviolette into the conversation. Bruce Cassidy's done an excellent job with the Boston Bruins. I think, you know, most people, you know, at the beginning of the season, Dave, were thinking, you know, the Boston Bruins are maybe going to squeak into the playoffs, and you know, they're competing with the Tampa Bay Lightning right now for the Atlantic Division crown. And you know, the Lightning are going to end up winning the Atlantic Division, but you know, Boston's made it interesting here. And for me, a guy like Jared Bednar has to be a finalist. And you know, we know how good of a year Nathan MacKinnon is having. I mean, MacKinnon is definitely in the Hart Trophy conversation. Mikko Rantanen, in his second year in the NHL, he's doing a great job. I really like what he's done with that group of defensemen. And Nikita Zadorov is a guy that I think has taken a little while to mature, and he's still young, in his early 20s. I think, you know, Samuel Girard is a really nice defenseman. I think Jared Bednar has really given that group of defensemen a lot more confidence. That has been the biggest weakness for the Avalanche. It's their defenseman, Dave. And, you know, we saw the Avalanche come into here last year, and the Jets absolutely blew them out. They just couldn't get the puck out of their own zone. So I think, you know, Jared Bednar deserves a lot of credit for how he's made this team a quicker team and how he's really brought that group of defensemen along here. And obviously the goaltending has been better with Semyon Varlamov and Jonathan Bernier. But I just, you know, thought it would be an interesting topic of discussion, Drew, because, you know, here in Winnipeg, we talk about the Rocket Richard race. We talk about the Hart Trophy race. But there are some coaches here that have done excellent jobs with teams that had very low expectations. And I think Colorado and New Jersey have to be at the top of that list, Hines and Bednar.
Well, it's funny, Dave, because, you know, you Hines, Bednar, Gallant, all teams that didn't have any expectations. And then there's the teams that have expectations and maybe even outperform those expectations. You know, Peter Laviolette doing such a fantastic job in Nashville. They're you know, currently the top team in the entire NHL. And yet...
How many games have they lost in 2018?
I don't know. You just assume it's a win. That's why, you know,
And for the record, they're usually losing... And then win. Like they've erased a number of third period.
They're like
deficits.
Seabiscuit. Yeah. They like to come from behind.
That's right.
I'm not even touching that reference. I mean, what do you know about Seabiscuit?
Oh, I can talk horses.
I know you can talk horses.
No, but I take Ezzy to the ponies. We usually go once a season.
I like to slop.
Yeah, your mother was a mother. you know, Dave, why don't we ever give credit to the coaches who just do a good job, even a great job, with teams that have heavy expectations?
Well, I think it's because they have heavy expectations. I think it's tough and it's not tough. I mean, the reality is for those coaches is that those expectations are set high because they have good rosters. And if they are just getting the maximum out, or if they're getting what they should be getting out of those rosters, it's not seen as some sort of huge success story simply because they're getting what they should be getting out of. I mean, Nashville is one of the best rosters in the NHL. John Cooper isn't getting a tremendous amount of credit in Tampa because he's got one of the best rosters. So the fact of the matter is that those guys don't get the same regard because they've got a lot of resources, whereas guys who don't have those same expectations or don't have those same resources are the ones who get held in high regard. And that's probably the way it should be because, again, like I said, if you're meeting expectations, even if you're slightly exceeding them, when you've got a power roster, it's not that impressive. But when you have a roster that you've cobbled together and you know, all the prognosticators are at the beginning of the season suggesting that you're going to be lucky to win X number of games and you're not going to have any, you know, measure of success. And then you go out and you beat those odds. I'm not suggesting that the prognosticators are geniuses by any stretch of the imagination. But the fact of the matter is generally it's based on some sort of understanding of what's happening in the league. And when you go out and you beat those expectations, like a number of the guys you guys have mentioned already have done, I think that's the reason why you generally get the regard you do and the reason the votes fall where they may.
Dave, here's another name. What about the Boogeyman? If the Florida Panthers make the playoffs, is the Boogeyman...
Well, I mean, think about it. They were, 12 points out of a playoff spot. Now, at the same time, the irony was that everybody was ruling them out, and they had played six less games than a lot of the teams they were chasing. Mm-hmm. So once they made up...
For those who don't know, by the way, that's Bob Buechner.
Yeah, yes. Head coach of the Florida Panthers. The Panthers now 3 points behind the New Jersey Devils.
I don't want to scare any
with
kids
two games
out there, Drew.
3 points, but 2 games in hand.
And 4 points behind the Blue Jackets with 3 games in hand.
Right.
So the Panthers just need to keep winning. 8-1-1 in their last 10. I don't even know what their record is in the last 20. It's something like 16-3-1 in their last 20, I think.
If Florida gets in, how does Bob Buechner not get, you know, get some consideration for the Jack Adams?
Well, that's let me ask you guys this question then. You know, we've said basically that Gallant is probably the favorite and more than likely going to win it. Who are the other two nominees alongside Gerard Gallant? How do you pick from a list of Buechner, Laviolette, Maurice, Hines, Bednar? I mean,
if I had to guess, I would go Hines and Bednar.
Yeah, I'd be going Hines and Bednar. I think, you know, Paul Maurice and Peter Laviolette have to be, you know, honorable mentions. And I think Bob Buechner, you know, has to be up there probably in the top 5 or 6 as well. But, you know, it's one of the best Jack Adams races that I can remember in recent memory. And I think, you know, for the record, I think all of the races this year, the Hart Trophy, we talked about that, the Rocket Richard Trophy, I mean, the Art Ross Trophy. I mean, the Calder Trophy is really the only trophy right now that I think is locked up by Matt Barzal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about the Norris Trophy earlier. I mean, you'd probably maybe give the edge to Drew Doughty, but, you know, John Klingberg is in that conversation. There's some other good defensemen. That certainly is wide open as well.
Yeah, of course, if you look at the Rocket Richard Trophy, Alex Ovechkin did not score last night for the Capitals. He still leads Patrick Laine by one goal, 42 goals to 41. Evgeny Malkin hot on their heels with 40 goals. So that race certainly coming down to the wire over the final 10, 11 games here of the regular season. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Chris Peters of ESPN.com. Talk a little bit about prospects, talk a little bit about college hockey as that's ramping up into playoff time south of the border. Chris Peters of ESPN.com joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, happy St. Patrick's Day. There's fun Irish drink specials and headliner Kyle Bottom. Two shows, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Tickets going quickly. Get them now, RumorsComedyClub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From ESPN.com, we're pleased to welcome back a good friend of the program, Chris Peters. Chris, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you on this Saturday morning.
Well, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me again.
Our pleasure. Chris obviously brought you on. Talk a little bit about prospects. Talk a little bit about U.S. college hockey as the playoffs are ramping up south of the border. You wrote an article this week for ESPN.com about the top 10 NHL prospect pipeline systems. I want to ask you about that article. You know, you label the St. Louis Blues as having the best pipeline system in the league. Are the Winnipeg Jets here, or were one of your honorable mentions? Can you talk to us about your thoughts on the Jets pipeline system and how you see the next wave of Jets players playing out?
Yeah, well, you know, that's really interesting, that kind of going through that exercise and seeing there's not a ton of separation right now. And I think part of the reason is, you look at a team like the Jets, where they've had so many guys essentially, you know, jump ahead and get into the NHL as young players, like Ehlers, like Laine. And then you get guys like Roslovic now who can kind of filter in as well. But he's still technically, you know, within our criteria, was still kind of, you know, considered a prospect, even though, you know, he's played quite a few games at the NHL level. So not a full season. But, yeah, I think, like, you know, for the Jets, one of the things I valued in this was just kind of depth. And I think that we've seen that. The Jets, all their top-end players end up in the NHL right away, and it leaves a little bit less. But there's still quite a bit there. I think the emergence of Mason Appleton this year has been a big story for kind of, you know, I didn't expect to see this level of production and success from him at this level this quickly. I thought he was a very good player before, having seen him, you know, in college, and he's a guy that really impressed me this season. So you have a guy like that can kind of filter in, and, you know, Roslovic obviously at the top, and then the big guy is Christian Vesalainen. And I think, you know, what he's done in the Liga this year in Finland, and what I saw at the World Juniors this year, it's a really smart hockey player. So, you know, so you still got these high-end guys that could help you long-term. But, you know, a team like the Blues, what they have going for them right now is I think they have three guys that'll probably, you know, are around top 30, top 40 prospects, including their two guys at the top, Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas. So, you know, those guys are among the best prospects in hockey right now. They're having phenomenal seasons in the OHL. They were both part of the Canadian junior team. You know, I think Kyrou is doing very special things this year and could make an NHL impact in the near future. And then you've also got Klim Kostin, who's playing at the AHL level at 18 years old and holding his own. He's a big kid. He had a great World Juniors. So having those three guys at the top of your prospect pipeline is huge. And then you've also got a goalie in Ville Husso who's had a really great year in the AHL and is already getting some NHL time. You know, he's starting to look more like a goalie of the future. So I think kind of they've got a lot of high end in their prospect pool, but they also have the depth. They also added Eric Foley in that trade, and I'm very high on him as well. A former Jets prospect. So for me, it's kind of a work in progress. I'm going to do a much deeper dive on this with all 30 teams or 31 teams in the summer. But just kind of looking through it, depth was a big factor, and I think that the Jets, that's one of the reasons they're still kind of in the honorable mention, even though they've had so many guys graduate so quickly.
Chris, I don't think anyone would be surprised, you know, to see teams like the Vancouver Canucks and the Arizona Coyotes in your top 10 prospect pipeline systems. But over the course of your research for this article, were you surprised to see so many teams that are doing well currently in the NHL in your top 10? So you've got Tampa Bay Lightning, number 8 on your list. You've got the Boston Bruins in there. You've got the Philadelphia Flyers in there. Were you surprised and expecting, you know, more teams at the bottom of the NHL standings to make that top 10?
Yeah, you know, you would think that, right? You know, I think because you get those high draft picks. But I think that one of the things that's the big separating factor is everyone right now is doing pretty well in the first round. Nobody really misses badly anymore in the first round. So you're able to get those top-end players, those guys like that. But where you're going to start seeing more success is when you have those mid-round picks hit. And I think that's one of the things that particularly the Tampa Bay Lightning have done very well. It's something that I think that the Philadelphia Flyers have done very well, and the Boston Bruins too. You know, because I look at a team like the Colorado Avalanche, who had really rough years, and they have done very well in terms of their first round draft picks, with the exception of one major miss in Connor Bleakley within the last several years here. But then they have Cale Makar, they have Connor Timmins, but they haven't really hit in the mid rounds, and that's one of the reasons why. You know, they have a very good top end, but they don't have the depth. And one of the teams that made it also Florida, they have a really good top end. Their depth is a little middling. They don't have a lot of diversity in terms of, you know, defense and goalies. I think it's just good teams will continue to filter in those guys, those mid-round picks. And so that's kind of sometimes you got to be lucky to do that, but sometimes you just got to know what you're valuing, what you're looking at your board. And I think a team, particularly like the Flyers, you know, having had two first-round draft picks helped a lot, because now they still have a top-end prospect in Morgan Frost, who's having a phenomenal year. So, you know, that's just kind of the whole thing. Those mid-round guys, and that's where they build the depth of their prospect pool. And then they don't need top-end guys because they have them on their roster already. But you still need to filter in the depth with guys on entry-level contracts, and that is what the value of those prospect pools, to me, provides, and that's one of the reasons why they're so high on the list.
Of course, here in Winnipeg, this is a team that's highly reliant, obviously, on allowing prospects to develop and get into that roster. Like you were talking about, 2014 fifth-rounder C.J. Seuss was the WCHA Player of the Year, and he's a top-10 finalist for the Hobey Baker Award. What has he done well for his team in Minnesota, and specifically, do you think he has a chance to be in that top three when the votes come down?
Yeah, you know, he's going to have a good chance. I think probably the fact that he's in the WCHA is going to go against him, and obviously there's a lot of guys that are in, you know, the major conferences that are going to probably have a leg up. You know, I think Adam Gaudette is the favorite right now, the Vancouver Canucks prospect for Northeastern, and leading scorer in the country. Really solid player. Cale Morris, who's having a phenomenal year as a goaltender for Notre Dame, certainly in the mix. So I think it'd be hard for him to get into the top three. But what he's done well this year is something that I think Minnesota State as a whole has done well. They play hard. I mean, they're a hard-nosed team. They're very physical. They are very difficult to play against. C.J. Seuss is a good player at both ends of the ice. We knew that he was going to be, you know, a really solid player, but I think he's just continued to take steps year after year. And that's good development at Minnesota State, where they've really become a place where you can go, and you might not play in the toughest conference in the country, but you're going to get a good development opportunity there with Mike Hastings, and he's going to help grow these players. And they have quite a few guys on the roster that either are going to become, you know, college free agents or were, you know, mid-round draft picks that are developing really well. But I think he's got good physical strength. He obviously has some skill, very smart hockey player. You know, is he going to be a top-end guy at the NHL level? Probably not. You know, he's probably somewhere, you know, bottom six, middle six, somewhere in there if he makes it. And I think that he's just really had a year where he's proven himself, and he's also a leader. I think that's an important thing. That is a very good team, top to bottom. They beat a lot of good teams outside of the WCHA, and that part of that is because they had that core group with, like, C.J. Seuss and Daniel Brickley guys that have been there for a few years and have kind of bought in. And he's a guy that I have, you know, high expectations for. I think it's going to be another guy, as long as they can get him signed, get him to Manitoba, play for the Moose. You know, he's going to have an opportunity to develop into a serviceable player at the next level for the Jets.
Chris Peters is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about prospects. Chris, being that it's mid-March, this is the time of the year where we shift our focus, or a lot of the hockey world's focus goes on to college free agents, those players who are not drafted, who've had successful college careers. The Vegas Golden Knights got the party started signing Zach Whitecloud of Brandon, Manitoba as a college free agent. That happened earlier in the week, or maybe late last week. What are the Golden Knights getting in Zach Whitecloud, who concluded his season at Bemidji State University?
Yeah, well, he's been a tremendous development story. I mean, you know, he was kind of a late bloomer. He's a big kid, right shot, which I think a lot of teams were really targeting him because of that. He is a good puck mover, stable, steady. You know, I think he's going to need some time at the AHL level to kind of adjust, but He's such a smart player that, you know, those guys tend to have an opportunity. He's probably going to end up being a long-term depth defenseman, and Vegas has a lot of defensemen already. But that's a team where they have to start, you know, using the free agency route with prospects to try and filter in and continue growing their AHL system, because they're, you know, they're currently sharing with the Blues. It's been interesting to kind of see how that goes. They've also got the Chicago Wolves that like to bring in AHL free agents to keep themselves competitive. So they've been able to kind of supplement with that. But a guy like Whitecloud comes in, and he gives them an opportunity to filter out that depth. But, yeah, really stable defenseman, and I think he's got some offensive upside. I'm not sold on that completely. But, you know, he moves the puck pretty well, and he defends extremely well.
Well, Chris, I wanted to go back to your prospect pipeline article, and you mentioned the Florida Panthers, and you know, considering that a former member of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show now works for the Florida Panthers, I think we're obligated to ask you about a couple of their prospects. I'm obviously just kidding, but Henrik Borgstrom is a guy that I don't know if a lot of hockey fans know about him, but I believe he had 50 points this year for the University of Denver, and they're in the final of the Frozen Faceoff tonight against St. Cloud State. Is he the early front runner for the Calder Trophy in the NHL next year? And for you, I mean, and you mentioned this in your article, he's been dubbed the artist. What's impressed you the most about him?
What's impressed me the most is that he is an artist. I mean, he creates like nobody else in college hockey right now. I think his stick handling is incredible. He's got good size. He takes pucks to the net hard. You know, he can make all those kind of little subtle plays too that just, you know, nobody really knows what to do with them. You know, it's not like a Johnny Gaudreau who can just dangle through everybody. I think he just finds seams. He just makes plays, and he's got great vision and just an absolute nose for the net. I mean, the kid just takes it to the house whenever he can. And it's great to see, because he's got so many different ways to get there. You know, the fact that he and Troy Carey, who's another one of the really high skill players in college hockey, are on the same team, it makes Denver so much fun to watch. And I think that Borgstrom over the last 2 years has been the most entertaining player in college hockey, just by, you know, the highlight reels that he's created. But the one thing that I've noticed about him this year versus last year is that I think that he is more determined, working harder, getting consistency. You know, that's a hard thing to do for a guy that age. You know, he's a true sophomore in college hockey, and you know, there's a lot of older guys out there, and they know how to play against skilled players, and they make it hard on them. But he's really made it hard on everybody else with how skilled he has become. And he is, you know, I think he's a top 10 prospect in hockey right now. I think that, you know, this, he has an opportunity to make a big impact, and I think he will make an impact in the NHL next year. It's just that there's going to be, as we've seen every single year, it's a loaded Calder field, and there's so many options. So I don't want to dub him the favorite yet, but I think that he'll absolutely be in the mix should he sign and get put in our good position in Florida.
Chris, one thing we have a tendency to do is future casting, which, as he just did with the Calder question, now I have a question about the 2019 entry draft, even though we haven't even had the 2018 one. Just how good is Jack Hughes, and is there anyone who's even close to touching him as that early first-round top pick favorite?
You know, the 2019 draft is going to be a really good one Americans, actually. He's got some guys on his U-17 team. He's playing with the U-18 team now at the National Team Development Program. But he's got some guys like Alex Turcotte that could push him. I think there's no doubt in my mind that he's the best in that class based on the players that I've seen, based on the scouts that I've talked to that are already looking at 2019 prospects, guys that went to the World Under 17 Challenge, and they said that in terms of pure skill, there's nobody close. I've been asking, people that have kind of been around the National Team Development Program for years and years, how does he stack up against some of the best they've had? You think about guys Austin Matthews, Patrick Kane, Jack Eichel. They've had so many of the top American players come through, and he's doing things this season that none of those guys can touch. He's already set the U-17 scoring record there, or scoring record for a player that's 16 years old. Beat out Phil Kessel, and he did it in 15 fewer games than Phil Kessel and Clayton Keller did in their U-17 years, and he's still going. He had two goals last night again. So he is an incredibly creative player. He does everything at high speed. The fact that he's 5'9" on a good day is not going to impact him very much because he's so shifty. He's so difficult to defend. And, you watch him on a game-by-game basis, and it's consistent effort the whole way. And that's another thing that people point out. It's his work ethic on top of the skill. And that's a big separating factor for him. I think that he has, I've spoken to him a few times this year. There's just this honest desire to be the best, and it comes through in his conversations, it comes through in the way that he plays, and it comes through in everything you hear from everybody else. So I think he's going to get pushed next year, but I don't think I think he's probably set himself up very well with what he's done this season and what he'll do next season to be the number one pick.
Chris Peters is with ESPN.com. Chris, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks for having me, guys. Always good to be with you.
Likewise, Chris. When we come back, we're going to be promoting a quality charity event taking place next Sunday. It's the Trek for Tourette. Aaron DeGroot is in studio to talk to us about it. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Pleased to welcome back to the program. We do this every year. Aaron DeGroot, he's here representing a charitable organization and a charity event called Trek for Tourette. The 10th anniversary of the Trek for Tourette goes next Sunday at Assiniboine Park, if I'm not mistaken. Aaron, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. And you're right, Drew. You do this every year. And I just want to first off express how grateful we are that you do have me in to talk about this awesome cause.
Yeah, so for members of our audience who might not know what Tourette's syndrome is, and I think probably they think of it what they've seen portrayed in the media, can you maybe shed some light on what Tourette's syndrome is all about and what the walk is raising money for?
100%, and you're right. It is portrayed in the media a certain way, right? Like, we see it in movies, and it's portrayed as a swearing disease of sorts, right? The fact is only 10% of people that have Tourette, has that form of it. So what it actually is it's a neurological disorder. It's characterized by involuntary motor and vocal tics, such as eye blinking, throat clearing, head jerking, and it's uncontrollable, right? And I say this every year when I come in. I mean, think of yourself having to sneeze, and you know what that feels like to hold that in. Well, it's very similar in that they can't hold these people who suffer from it can't hold these involuntary movements in. Even greater than just the neurological issues. I mean, that can be treated with medication. There's no cure, but it's the bullying and the perception and the things that go along with that. And most of the people that come to our Trek are children, right? And I think that's the awareness that we need to get out there. If people understand the disorder, then they're more likely, to be accepting of it and not make fun of kids and things like that, bullying.
Aaron, we've been bringing you on the show now for, I think it's 5 years, maybe 6 years, to promote Trek for Tourette, and I've been at the Trek for Tourette the last couple of years, and this year is actually the 10th anniversary across Canada for the Trek for Tourette. What's going to be maybe a little bit different about this year's Trek for Tourette? Trek for Tourette, pardon me, being the 10th anniversary, what can people look forward to come next Sunday?
Yeah, well, at the Trek itself, we always have a great turnout. And, you know, this year we're fortunate to have some mascot support. We're going to have Goldie out there for the kids. There's always a free lunch. There's a little bit of celebrity flair at the various locations. This thing happens across Canada in most major cities and some smaller ones as well. So if there's any TLC fans out there, if you've watched the show 90 Day Fiancé, Lauren, who was on the show, she actually she suffers from Tourette, and she's actually coming out to the Hamilton location to Trek. So there's a, you know, 1 in 100 people have it, right? So there's a lot of celebrities that have come out. Elliot Friedman is a great example. He's written about his struggles with Tourette, and Tim Howard, the former goalie of the U.S. national soccer team.
You know, Aaron, have you noticed that the awareness has increased, and has there been maybe a decrease in the bullying now that people have a little more empathy towards people who suffer from this?
I think so. You know, what's really happened, and again, you know, this is the 10th year, and my wife and I have been involved in this for most of those 10 years. People come out and you know what? They celebrate that they're different, you know, and that they have the disorder. And it's like with anything, you know, you guys do Bell Let's Talk, you know, on this station, promote that. And the more awareness you get out there, I think the more educated the public becomes and the more accepting they become of people who have, you know, whether it be depression or Tourette or you know, whatever the disorder.
Aaron DeGroot joining us here in the studio. We're talking about the Trek for Tourette. It takes place next Sunday at Assiniboine Park. Aaron, for people who want more information about the walk, who want more information about Tourette syndrome in general, where's the best place that they can get that information or maybe get involved and participate in the walk next Saturday?
Please go to our website. It's Tourette.ca, T-O-U-R-E-T-T-E.ca. This being the 10th anniversary, we're doing a hashtag on social media. It's called Trek 10x10, which stands for Trek 10 times 10. We're challenging everybody to find 10 people to raise $10 each. If we do that nationwide, we raise our goal of $100,000.
And Aaron, we sent out the link on the Illegal Curve account and the TSN 1290 account, so we're definitely going to be participating, making donations, and we encourage everybody out there listening to do the same.
Yeah, and you can click to donate on the website, and if you at me on Twitter and you're going to make a donation, I'll verify that, and I will match your donation. There's a challenge going out from me right now.
Wow. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at DeGrootWPG. The Trek for Tourette is next Sunday at Assiniboine Park. Thank you, Aaron, for joining us
in studio.
Big thank you to our previous guests on the program, Chris Peters, Greg Wyszynski, John Lane, Scott Burnside, and Jason Bell. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to you each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website is illegalcurve.com. Big props to producer Rory. For Dave Manouk, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Aaron DeGroot, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.